Studio.
Nice.
Yeah, man. I you know, one of my favorite things, and you know, Gamble and I, we just hit record, we just go. So hopefully you're
cool. Hey, I'm down. I got no walls either. So
all right, cool. One of the favorite things I enjoy about Leon is y'all's Leon Live stuff that y'all do, the Leon Loft stuff that y'all do. I mean, it's cool stuff. It's something different than most manufacturers, probably all manufacturers, get themselves into.
Well, I mean, just to kick it off right from there, you know, one of our visions, like the vision of Leon has always been the same, which is, you know, to mix art with audio, design with technology. But what we don't say in public is we also like to mix business with bohemia. Because, you know, at Leon, we're all artists. Like, we're still all real engaged artists. You know, there's engineers and musicians and recording artists, fine artists, digital artists. And so we like every day to kind of just be immersed in the arts. And when we first started, we were literally just a studio. We weren't like a business. So we didn't start the company as like a traditional company. We weren't like, let's start a company and make, we were like, no, we were all a pack of wolf artists and musicians. We were recording and touring. And so we created home bases and we were making all kinds of crazy things, you know, everything from guitars to speakers to art. So, you know, the reason that the loft became important to us, or just to have a live performance center in the middle of the company, or like right literally on site, was because we never want to lose track of why we do this.
How far back are we going, Noah? Because I know the company from my 10 years in the industry, but how far back are you talking about there?
Chris, I mean, we started right out of college. We were all young artists and musicians. And so we started the company literally in 1997. So when we incorporated, so we started making really bizarre products right away. And our first product was like so bizarre, no one understood it. We called it Picture Sound. And it was just like after we were making studio monitors in the studio, and we had in the studio, we also had an art gallery that we all shared space. And so the products kind of just slowly morphed together. So this is almost 20 some years ago. So the company really formed as an art and audio company from the beginning. And so the first products we were making were art products that had speakers in them. We didn't really know what we were doing or where we were going with this, but we knew like things had to change. And we just tried to really lean into our creative sides to just say, we know things could get better than what was being made, especially at that time in the late mid 90s.
And who did you identify as your audience? Who was your customer? Did you have that vision that you saw a market or an opportunity, or was it creative first, opportunity later?
That's a great question. So like sometimes saying a circumstance plays into all this. So the way we were situated was like, I was mostly a musician and a commission artist. My friends were business people and more recording on the recording artist side. And then upstairs was a frame shop from us right on our street. So our factory still is in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is, you know, a college town for University of Michigan. So there's amazing talent around. And the business really formed as a conglomeration of a lot of different just characters playing into one group. And so we happened to meet somebody who was an engineer from Bose. You know, then the person upstairs from the frame shop was like, hey, I think you guys can make things look a lot cooler than they are right now. And, you know, and then we just got input from a lot of different voices. But I think from the art side, the thing that was really working was we were open as an art studio. It was called the Underground Gallery. And so people would come down to the Underground, you'd hear music coming up, and slowly people were like wondering just, what the hell are these people doing down there? And so we actually got to interact a ton with customers early on. We really didn't even know what a customer was or how to define that. But I always have been a commission artist. Part of being a commission artist is listening to what your customers want. So because I was so naive about, you know, what do we want to do? Where are we going? We were really able to just tune into what the customers were asking for, which is like, hey, I'm not really into how these speakers look. Or, hey, I see that you made these speakers out of solid wood, because at that time we were making a lot of studio monitors. It would be really cool if you could make it fit into my built-in shelf. or, and so we got a lot of the same characteristics to this day that's just built into our DNA over the years. You know, really every Leon that you're getting now is kind of like a commissioned piece of art. There's nothing on a shelf sitting around. So like, you know, when we're building something to match, what I love about it is like, we're really building for individuals still. It's still an artisanal company in that way.
Digital Ramblers, for those joining us today, we have Noah Kaplan. He is the president of Leon Speakers out of Ann Arbor, Michigan. And this guy goes deep. And if you haven't checked, I mean, for real, if you haven't checked out their website, please run over there. Click right now. Get on the keyboard and start clicking away. LeonSpeakers.com is where you can check them out at. And they truly customize any type of speaker cabinet and put the utmost quality of components inside these speakers. Probably one of my favorite speaker sets that I have ever seen is the one that you made out of skateboards.
Ooh, and
dude, yeah. Those are so, like, oh, so fly. God. I mean, those are
thank you.
Ridiculous. Holy, yeah.
Well, hey, shout out to Rhett Smith. We got a lot of skater culture here at Leon too over the years. So Rhett, who is, you know, amazing right-hand person at Leon, just will go through anything to create something new and original. He actually went around to all the skate shops collecting decks, decks, glued them all up and created boards out of those decks. So like what you saw, for people who haven't seen this, yeah, he glued up 70 boards just to make the first pair of speakers.
There's more than one pair.
Yeah, there's more than one pair. We started like getting into this, but we also connected with like a charity. So like to give, you know, so we made every single stack up. It's beautiful because like the plywood that you make skate decks is multicolored.
Yeah.
So it just gives you that like just really beautiful stack up and really different style. So every single one is like completely original. And then he also collected like stickers from all the local skate shops. So on the back is just as sick as the front. It's got like all the sticker shops, all the supporters on the back of the speakers too. And so now every year we're still digging in and making speakers made of skateboards. And there's a background project going on right now that may be one of the nastiest projects we've ever gotten in the house, which we can't talk too much about, but this new project is a sound sculpture made completely of skateboard decks. That's going to a really well-known skateboarding brand out in the West Coast. No details can be shared yet, but details shall be shared in a couple of months when this thing is due.
Yeah, that culture where you're working with commissioned pieces, you're working with other industries. You know, JJ and I know you from the home technology front, but
yeah. It's
very much a two-pronged front to the business. There's the commercial sector, which JJ and I rarely get involved in, and then we know the home technology. Is there an equal balance there, or is it weighted more to the custom install, or is it custom commercial? Where's the split?
That's a great question. We got like this sneak peek into the commercial industry by accident, just because we were always focused on making monitors and TVs look and sound better. And so this is a crazy actual story of how this balance happened, because we had no idea, you know, what we were getting into. But when we first made, speakers to match TVs, we were building for a company called Mycroft out in Boston. And this place was run by a guy named Mark Trachtenberg, who he ended up being one of the people who really pushed what was then called telepresence into the foreground. So like, you know how we're all doing this video call right now? Well, like go back 15, 20 years, he had a company called Telerist that he founded. They raised a bunch of money to really change how corporate world was communicating. So we were building out these gigantic rooms with him. We got sucked into a vortex of what was called telepresence. And we were like, what is this? Big company stuff. So through that lens, we started really understanding like, the commercial industry is massive. I mean, in comparison, so $250 billion market of commercial technology is being sold. And our niche in that market is really about making your picture sound good, and especially actually about making this exact thing we're doing right. It used to be just for big Fortune 500 companies. So we had a strong decade just really refining audio solutions, for large format, big boardrooms. You know, everybody from, you know, Boeing to Spotify has big Leon systems in them. And we still mostly focus on that. Now, of course, everything is changing as we get more and more into doing this on a regular basis. So the balance between the residential and the commercial, like, both are the same in that design is the first language we all understand, right? You know, we all want stuff to work. You guys know that. I watch all your Digital Ramble shows. You know, how does this thing work? How do we put it all together? How do we make it seem like it's magic, that it magically works? But really, like, how does it look? Because if you're like me or you guys right now, it turns out we're looking at our screen for like 8 hours a day. So we really shifted over about 10 years to say, like, okay, we have a whole division of just commercial, because the commercial stuff, you know, we're talking about projects are global. You know, when we do a project for a Fortune 500 company, you know, they have 60 offices around the world. And they're going to roll out the same design, the same technology, they call it the same standard, around the world. And we're going to work with audio video consultants on those kind of projects, architects, and then just maniacal amount of detail driven designers. Some can drive a person crazy with details, but similar to, like, you know, the home industry, it's still really all bespoke. You know, it's people. Our people, wherever they are, commercial, residential, home, I think everybody wants like a better experience. So it was different trying to convince commercial installation companies that design matters, similar to how it was this, you know, the same when we first joined the industry, like, but it was mostly a stereo industry. And so right when I got into that, like, I think I spent 5 years just telling people, like, hey, your TV is not a stereo. And your stereo doesn't have to go in your living room. And if it does go in your living room, we had to, like, kind of change how it looks. So that story's still going on. Still telling the same old tale.
So, you know, you're talking about design. And one of the, Gamble and I, every year, we try to get out to go to CEDIA Expo. Yeah. And one of our favorite booths must stop at is the Leon speaker booth.
Thank you.
And the detail and the thought that goes into y'all's booth is epic. I mean,
thank you.
I think wins booth of the show almost every year. But can you talk about a little bit more on design and the importance of why design is crucial to our industry, to smart home, to acoustics, to, you know, video?
Can I just add something to that as well for mm-hmm. the question? It often take what are considered statement pieces and make mm-hmm. them more of a statement, which is, you know, you take sometimes the best in class and elevate it even further, which I'm fascinated by.
Thank you. Thank you. No, I genuinely appreciate that. Thank you. And I'm glad you guys noticed this, because our number one core value at Leon is creativity. And the reason I love this industry and that I love the dealers that we work with in this industry is because I think that this is just such a highly creative industry. You have to, and when I mean creativity, like, our creativity comes in a different form. Like, a lot of people think creatively, you know, I'm a painter, so, you know, oh, it's painting, it's making the music. To me, it's really about creative problem solving. And so we always like to kind of push ourselves out of our own comfort zone every single year to find that creative growth, right? Because if you could solve that problem, you're hopefully gonna be able to solve the simple everyday problems better. And you're gonna grow a team that's able to, number one, respond right away to anything that's happening on the market. Cause, you know, technology moves so quickly. So we wanna not only think about ways we can grow, but we want the whole industry to grow together, because we have to. We always have to adopt, like, the latest, greatest. And you guys behind the scenes, you know, try to create that one magical thing that makes it seem like, oh, this is so easy. But you look in the rack with blinky lights and wires and it's insane. And I always say, like, if you want to see, like, what we have to do in the foreground, this industry is just as good in the background, right? There's just as many artists who are making perfect wire pass and signal pass in the background as there are making, you know, custom made bespoke speakers in the foreground. And so at CEDIA, it's definitely a flex, you know, we want to say, but it's not a show off flex. It's a flex in terms of pushing the industry forward. So, you know, when we're making, you know, for instance, a Media Day Core piece where we'll be doing a sound sculpture. First of all, what the hell is a sound sculpture? Why make a sound sculpture? And to us, we're doing sound sculpture. So we really want to change the way people think in general about sound, right? Too many people still to this day will think about a speaker and you're thinking about a little box or a little circle or something that really isn't about a statement. But I think we have so much more capacity for thought between us all, and everybody's willing. That's what I love also about the industry, is people are willing to accept new things and then try to go out and get it. Like the last thing we pushed out the sound sculpture last year. The piece I'm working on right now, conceptually, we met at the show. They're like, hey, I think I got something for this. Can you talk to my client? Can you help us with this? And yeah, fast forward to now, boom, we got the piece, we got the commission, we're working together, we're collaborating. And so those ideas are more like just creative sparks that we could all riff off of. So yeah, this year we were just coming off like the call that today about CD. I'm like, wait, CD, I'm like, I gotta like get back in that mode. Are you guys gonna go? What's going on? What's the deal?
You know, it's definitely in my calendar. It's 3 days rather than 5 days. You know, and so it's, I like the shorter schedule. I don't know. It's a good possibility. I definitely want to go.
You guys are busy.
To be honest with you, man, I haven't been this busy since like 2008. I mean, it's been a decade and a half since we've been this cranked up. Oh, a year ago in March, I think we were all going, oh my gosh, what is going to happen? The ship's about to sink. And just the opposite, man. It took wings and we've been flying. It's been amazing.
It's unbelievable. Like on the wings of like some hard, really hard times. Mm. But you know, you really realize during this time how important it is, like the vibe of your house. Mm. We've all been overlooking that a lot. And so, yeah, I think our industry was really well positioned to be able to meet the needs of the time.
I don't think anybody was prepared that the need was now.
No. And now there's like, you know, there's different issues, different problems, but it's been really amazing. Like just working really closely with dealers through this time, you know, like spending time, not only just doing this and like connecting more about thinking about the way we all think together. But I mean, I was on calls, like I would say for the first 4 to 6 months, I was on calls till 2 a.m. with dealers just hanging out. Mm-hmm. You know, just being like, well, what do we do now? And then made so many like close friends in new ways, you know, because we weren't also, you know, we were able to focus a little bit on what we were doing, why we're doing, what our teams look like around us, what was important to us, all those kind of things.
So did the last 12 months also make you make any big changes on supply chain, factory, sourcing of products? Did you have to pivot to plug gaps that started to appear? And I understand on the supply chain, it became very difficult to get components on the electronic side. Were there big changes happening behind the scenes that, you know, the swan above the water is graceful, but below?
well said, Chris. Oh my God. Yeah. It was a massive fist fight. It's still a massive fist fight every day. You know, just with the schedule, like, obviously with employment and scheduling and just figuring out like all the people's schedules that they're, because we, you know, we have our factories here. So just, you know, the time that people have to invest and then like all the safety measures. And then we had to rebuild all the labs, like all of our engineering labs, completely all our open format labs had to be rebuilt. Mm-hmm. Close quarter labs had to be rebuilt. All the HVAC had to be redone. Like that's all going on in, you know, first 100 days. Where are all the people? We were a shutdown state. So it's like, you know, okay, what is it going to look like in 3 months? And even after you got to those phases, I think, you know, all people in business found themselves in really new seats. You know, I know a lot of what I had to do was figure out, you know, what does this mean? How do I file for PPP? Who's going to help me get through this? What business people do we have? All these collaborations that we needed to have. And our supply chain obviously is global. You know, our two main suppliers are in Israel and Norway. So luckily we had a little bit of an edge because, you know, anything coming out of Asia and China was like, the supply chains completely shattered, and still is. And then wood prices start skyrocketing. You can't get toilet paper from the factory. It's like, what the hell is going on? So like, my days were hysterical. I literally would spend time, I'd say, you know, 30% of my time just writing and formulating thoughts of how we're going to go forward. You know, like putting out policy for hundreds of people is a big responsibility. You know, when you have people's lives online. And so we have other businesses too outside of Leon. So it's just like, it wasn't in our strong suit. You know, we're used to like fist fighting, making speakers. This was more about like, wait, you're not shipping stuff, or when are you going to ship stuff? Oh, wait, we're not, no people are allowed in the building. Okay, hold on. What are we like? So I was literally in the factory for like a month and a half, like, you know, like old school. You know, I spent 15 years in the factory, so it was, I like it there. But you know, you're walking around big empty halls, just wondering, okay. And fast forward to now when we're in a much better place, but between the social unrest, the political unrest, obviously the corona, all these things compounded into really complex business life. And still, what I was most impressed by was people's willingness to change and pivot and be flexible.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I'm so appreciative of all the people we work with, like all the dealers, just having fun, laughing, even through scary times. I mean, really dark times. A lot of our friends lost parents, a lot of really sick people in New York. Like a lot of our dealers were super sick in New York City. We were like, what the hell? And you're on the phone with them while they're like in locked up in a room. And that's where you'll never forget those times, you know, and those bonds and this struggle. So when you talk about pushing the boundaries and pushing the limits, I think this year for sure, all of us had to do that.
You know, it's a very difficult time, even difficult now for a lot of people, but you know, business can kind of get stale and, you know, you just kind of get it. You just start taking the easy road, and creativity, sometimes it's like, where's it going to come from? And I feel with a little bit of this friction that we've all been through, it's kind of been a silver lining. It's been healthy for our industry to say, you know, take a different perspective of, you know, operations or procedures or how we source. And it really, you know, like you were saying, we're a creative industry. Mm-hmm. I think silver lining wise, I think it's very beneficial. Are you feeling any repercussions of that in that aspect of things?
I love what you just said, that like that creative, that tension is often really good for the arts. Like you think about the best music isn't written when you're in love. Oh, sometimes it is, but it's mostly written like when your heart is broken a little bit.
Right.
You know, so like, when you're writing songs, a conflict really helps stir up that creative circle, that pot that's in your mind. And you can go two ways during that. You know, we have so many friends who are musicians who literally were stuck at home, you know, not able to work. You know, all my bar friend or, you know, my friends with bars and restaurants, you know, like insane. What are we going to do? Pivot out of it. And what I found was, this was the craziest, like, you know, we talk about silver linings. You know, I've been a traveler for this, you know, since I was 22 years old, you know, traveling. So I had never been home for so long. And you know, when, and so like, you know, you think about being a traveler, a Rolling Stone, you know, like, you know, so I come home, I create insane chaos, destroy everything, create the next show, we're breaking everything, and then jump on the road again. So it's not like, you know, those 100 or 200 days that I'm on the road were just the days away. It was also those other days between, I was also mentally away. You know, so being able to refocus all that energy, we designed a maniacal amount of new product. It's almost, we won't catch up to what we've designed for, I'd say, 10 years. Wow. And the new products that will come out in the next, like, are some of the most, I would say, bizarre. And like, we were going for like otherworldly style designs, but to try to make them accessible. So we also started working with people from all over the world. Like, I'm working with a designer from Paris on a whole outdoor concept of stuff that's just almost finished. You know, I'm working with a team out in California on a whole new style for architectural audio, like things that we haven't ever thought about. But like right now I'm sitting, because I also never sat at a desk, by the way. So I designed like a whole bunch of like new things to like make the podcast experience better, you know? And like, so right now I'm sitting in like one of the new designs, and this thing's going to launch next month, which will be a way to like make the monitor that we're in front of today. Cause as a designer, I always like, I like working on the things you use most, right? You know, like I love speakers because like I listen to me, I'm, you know, I listen to 8-10 hours of music a day. So I like designing speaker stuff. You know, if I'm watching TV, I want that experience like to be perfect also. But watch this, ready? Here, I'm in the new product right now. I'll turn it off for a second. So you could see like, and then if you move your microphone out of the product, you know, like there's just a lot of good discovery that goes on just being a person who's, I never sat down before. And so I realized like, you know where there really hasn't been any innovation? Computers.
Yeah. Yeah.
They still suck. I mean, they still.
So you had to let the dust settle.
Yeah.
In order to see that there was opportunity.
For sure. For sure. I mean, it was, I didn't realize how much time there was spent thinking about what you're going to do next, you know, going to do next, what are you going to do next? Instead of giving yourself that, you know, that 1 hour to actually deeply think about what you're doing or why you're doing it, or slow down and, hey, and let me say it, spend a minute with the family. That's right. I'm sure you guys could relate to this, right?
You know, I'm interested in, because in the UK at the moment, we're kind of on a countdown where we're all about to be released. They're going to open the gates. We're all going to be able to walk back into the park. I'm imagining soundtracks, music, dawn chorus, celebratory music, that thumping bass in the distance. We're all heading towards the stage. And I really believe we're going to have our own roaring 20s. We've talked about it on the podcast before. It's going to be our decade, albeit we're partway through it already, but we're going to go into, I think, 2 to 3 years of celebrating, embracing, gathering, appreciating the people, the communities that we were in during that time. And music is going to be a big part of it. Not the TV. For me, the TV had its time. It's just had 12 months of attention. Yeah. Audio, indoor, outdoor, commercial, retail. Yes. You know, where we gather, live music will come back again because we've all missed that.
Oh.
Gigs, concerts, comedy, everything, you know. So Leon, I imagine, is going to be flooded even more.
I completely agree. Because like, you know, historically, this is the same kind of crash that happened just before the last Roaring 20s. And we had always dreamed like the lion that like we were telling that story about, like, you know, the Roaring 20s being a decade we can really celebrate technology actually working right now. Like we went through a lot of time where it really didn't work that well, you know, like, so, you know, now stuff is really working and you can really create amazing things with the technology, but I completely feel you on that. I do foresee not only a renaissance in music, all these artists have been so busy creating right now and rethinking. And also with all the political unrest, there's a lot of social change that's also happened, which I think is really also good for art and music and culture. Like our culture needed a kick in the head to see some of the problems that we had. We just didn't see them. We knew they were there, but we were never having to confront them. And so when you add up all those ingredients, I think it's definitely a recipe for not only like a straight up party, but like a true cultural renaissance. And there's going to be, back to use JJ's word, there's going to be a lot more friction coming. You know, it's going to be I think coupled with that renaissance, you will see more bubbles start to burst. And ultimately, I think that's good for us because like being able to change and let go of old thoughts, unlearn things, you know, I think that's part of art in general and part of society and growing as a society. So yeah, I can't wait to see where you guys go in the UK because I can imagine the pubs are going to fill up quickly as soon as those vaccinations go out. And I can't wait for that day as well because I know the hardest part is like, you know, which I think is going to take a longer time, is like not seeing people's faces. That's hard.
A smile.
a smile, or like, hey, what's up? Like, how are you? How are you doing? So, yeah, that's why I like Zoom, because at least we can see each other.
Right.
And connect this way. Hard time, but I'm ready to move on as well. Yes.
Chris, you know, something else that I enjoy about Leon Speakers and your YouTube channel is just amazing. It's really well done. But you put videos of yourself creating your artwork.
Yeah.
And man, you attack, you know, your pieces. I mean, honestly, you remind me of Scott Whelan, you know, like, and he's on the mic, and you right up in there.
That's how I feel.
You know? So,
yeah. It's us little guys. We just got like all this pent up energy, and you know.
You know, your latest one I was watching was with Marvin Gaye. And tell me, how long have you been painting? Is this something that you started as a young adult, or has it gone back to elementary, or like, when'd you get into it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I was definitely a born artist as long as I can remember. I was always drawing. It was always my core. But I would honestly say my core talent as a person was in fine arts. And art was definitely the thread that stitched everything I've done together. And the issue with art for me was because I was born with a lot of energy also, like it wasn't a great fit for me, even though it was my trade, my gift, all that stuff. It's a very solemn thing to do, right? Like when I was, because I was a full scale, you know, fine artist for a decade, you know, working artist, painting. And the reason music was so important to me, the reason I'm such a speaker head and such a gear head, was because art was really difficult for me to focus on, because you're alone 12 hours, you know, it's like a trade, you know, like you are sitting there, like when I was doing commission art or murals, or if I'm up on a ceiling or doing commercial stuff, like you're alone for hours and hours. And this is pre-internet era, you know, so it's not like I had everything with me. Like, you know, I had a radio, I had a boom, I had like old fashioned things to carry me through. But music was always my battery, you know, it was always I couldn't do art without music. And eventually what happened was, to build into my social life, I got so obsessed with music and record culture and like New York City culture and like being able to go to all the record shops and connect with all my friends, that I started playing music, because I'm like, I got to figure this out. And eventually, you know, after learning music and joining a band and creating bands and playing in New York City bands and all that for years, I finally realized that my higher purpose was actually something different. And so one day I remember telling the band, back then it was a band called The Still, me and my brother was in it and a bunch of other band members. And we were playing at this place called The Wetlands in New York City, where we were a regular band. And I said, I think I'm going to paint tonight at the show. And they're like, paint with that? What do you mean? So I'm like, I don't know, just we're going to do this. So we used to practice at Leon Speakers, like in Ann Arbor. We were actually based in Ann Arbor, so we'd all use the underground gallery and Leon Speakers as our practice area. That was our joint, you know? So when we would practice, like, so that one day I rolled out a piece of canvas right on the wall. And I remember the first one that I practiced was John Lennon. Because I could see John Lennon in my face, like that New York City John Lennon, like I could draw it for you, like it's from memory to this day. And, you know, I didn't know how long it would take, but I remember that once the second I started, I felt like it was something I have done forever. And so that was dating back maybe 25 years. And that journey of live painting led me on insane roads that I could never tell anybody about. I mean, I was backstage at insane, because I was alone, but I was like, that music was the driver. And then would be the time, you know, preparing for the shows, live big shows, not knowing where I was going to show up. And then like performing like the first Wetlands. I mean, people went mental for it. You know, we auctioned the first one out, auctioned the first one off. And then I was like, oh my God, the painting went for more than two times the entire amount that the band made in that night.
Wow.
At the Wetlands at a sold out show. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, well, I guess no one's doing that. So that all that money would go into the pot. And that really made sense for all, you know, like remember in the vision I told you about at the beginning to mix art with audio and design with technology and business bohemia, that checked all those boxes. And so still like, I literally do it as an exercise to disappear and forget about who I, you know, like you have to, like when you're a musician and you're on stage and you're playing well, you disappear is the only way I could describe it. And that's when you know you're living your highest self. So I try to plan that into my life now, you know, a couple of times a year to still do live art, to still say yes to any charitable event that comes. And now I do all those pieces 100% for charities. Or just for exercise, mental exercise. So I have a lot. This year I have to do a lot. I have a lot planned. I have like, I think 7 portraits for murals that I want to accomplish this year, but getting it done quickly, and exerting musical force on art. I think that's like, that's where I want to be. That's where I want to go. And so every year, you know, we make that and then we create plaques for all of our dealers who help support us. So also like, part of the principle is like giving art an accessible route to be shared with people. So similar to music, like, hey, this is a simple statement. It should just make you feel a certain way. And I want to share that as much as possible. And that's like kind of the heart of the vision for not only how I run, but also how the brand still runs.
That's fantastic.
Kind of a deep answer, so I apologize.
No, I really, really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Taking it back into a home technology direction, just as we get towards the end of the episode.
Yeah.
Give me one or two of what you would term your kind of breakthrough products in the home technology channel. What were the products that you saw a definite hockey stick effect when that hit the market?
That's an easy one for me to answer because I would have never expected in a million years with all the weird stuff and products we created. But back in New York City, when we first started selling Leons, you know, our first product was called Picture Sound, and Picture Sound was a flat panel speaker that you hung on the wall that had custom silk screened art. Right. And when we took that to New York City, it was not widely accepted at all. It was completely hated on. And so we started it wasn't like that first product. It was interesting to people. We were very young. It was still selling to stereo guys in New York City and in the tri-state area. But that's when the flat panel TV came out. And the reason we made that, because we thought that the flat panel TV for sure was the key to the pathway to the future of home technology, home theater, ways to bring movies and music to life in different ways. And so we were already hitching our wagon to that. Now, the first product we made were speakers to match a flat panel TV. We made the first speakers to match flat panel displays in literally 1998. So our Profile series has been selling that long. And that when we designed that, it was definitely a breakthrough because people were like, oh, I get it. Because they used to take the flat panel speakers and literally throw them out because they were made of like plastic and they only included them in the box and they'd be classified as TVs instead of monitors.
Yeah.
But then we started noticing when we were putting these things up in the city that people were tearing out their big old systems. You know, remember CRT TVs and those, I don't even remember what they were. They were like the TVs with the light bulbs, like 3 light bulbs in them.
I think remember CRT projections.
Yeah, those things, rear projector, gigantic things. And so they had all, they were massive. How they even got them in these buildings, I have no idea. They'd pull them out and then there would just be a giant void. And so I noticed weirdly, and this is another art thing, that a TV, the flat panel TV, the aspect ratio is completely different. It's a 16:9 aspect ratio, which was different than the old TVs, which was letterbox.
Mm-hmm. 4:3
aspect ratio. Yeah. Why is this important? Well, because when we started noticing that people had these spaces, there was 2 issues that I noticed, like for design. The first one was clutter. Like if you want to create a theater in a home or have multi speakers, you had to put 3 speakers around the TV. And that just to me looked bulky and didn't feel right. And I remember the exact conversation I had with a dealer in New York from Sound Insight when he said, hey, Noah, I love these side speakers. Like, but let me send you a picture. He literally sent me a picture like a physical,
like in the mail.
Like, this is what I mean. He sent me a picture. Like, this is what I have. I'm like, okay. So I get the picture. I'm like, okay, got you. So I was like, well, what if we were, instead of having a lot of speakers around, what if we combine all the speakers into just one single unit? And he's like, I don't see why we can't. And so I was like, well, engineering wise, honestly, when it comes to TV, if you're listening to a TV, it's not like you have a stereo. It's not a TV, is not a stereo. You know, you listen to your TV in two channel, it's a broadcast signal. But when you have a home theater, 80% of the dialogue comes out of the center channel speaker. So I was like, this might actually make sense. So we worked with our little engineering team. And after that, we came out with the first product, which is now called a soundbar, which we called the Horizon speaker. Now, this is some weird esoteric Horizon historical stuff, but like the real original Horizon was scaled. The height of it was scaled to turn the 16:9 aspect ratio of a TV into a letterbox visually. So it would be the golden ratio, which your mind actually is conditioned to like. So there were some super weird things, but that Horizon is what really caught on. And that hockey stick was so dramatic at a certain point in my life where, you know, I was, you know, we built, that was when we went from a wood shop to a factory, and that factory went to the next factory, and that factory, we moved factories probably three times just to keep up with demand. And remember, there was no such thing as a soundbar before that. So still in our DNA, in our blood is the soundbar. So a lot of things I still design there, they're actually just iteratives of soundbars. You know, for commercial, it's just a soundbar with a camera in it. You know, if it's going on the wall, it's a soundbar with lighting and a camera and technology in it. But I know it's part of our design vernacular, and that you don't want to step away from, you know. So, but that out of all things led to what you now know as Leon. And we didn't have a competitor in that field for 5 years. Wow. Yeah, it was us. We were these speaker, like people would be like in New York, they'd be like, give me that Leon thing that goes under. And then like the only other competitor was Artisan, and Artisan made the side speakers, and we're like, cool, you guys got that, we got this. But we would have never known. I would have never known this is what I'd be doing as an artist and musician, you know.
I learned a little bit of history today.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, that's pretty cool to be able to pin that one on your shirt and say, yeah, that was us.
It was
thinking outside the box, finding solutions. Yeah, I mean, that's what our industry's about.
Yeah, just trying to like, I love like making things work for people, and I love being like kind of an extension of the dealer's design vision or the customer's design vision, and just being like, you know, it's a humble stance, because the truth is like a lot of people don't want to see the speaker. They want it to blend in. And that's usually, as a designer, that's not really what you want all the time. Like, right. So I realized what we want, our form of design was like really kind of about being discreet, but putting music back where people really were spending time, and using those components, like you were talking about before, that we had learned, you know, the best technologies from around the world, so that you could hear things a lot differently and see things a lot differently. And so now, like, just keep on expanding. Like, I never would have thought that 98-inch TVs would be going, like, being hung up in residential houses, but here we are. Like, 75-inch TVs are like the smallest ones we do now.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So yeah, lots going down, gents.
No doubt. You know, if people, and you know, I already gave a shout out to your website as well as your YouTube. You. Are y'all on Instagram as well?
Yeah, we are at Leon Speakers on every single level. Mm-hmm. Because not a lot of Leon Speakers around. So we got all the handles straight up locked down. So yeah, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, House, Pinterest, wherever you may be. Hit us up anytime. At Leon Speakers, leonspeakers.com. We got a brand new website launching in a month and a half. That will be totally new, all brand new imagery and brand books coming out. So lots on the horizon up at Leon.
Where does the name Leon come from? Who picked that?
How much time do we have? It may be a deeper question for another day, but it is an esoteric and bizarre story of youth and art. I'll leave it at that. So right now we could say Leon You could think of Leon, just think of El Leon, the lion. Yeah. But that is definitely not where the name came from. It came from, I can't get into the story right now, but you and I will talk offline about that.
That's cool.
In a pub, yeah.
You tickled a little bit about other interests or businesses that you're in. Is there anything that you'd like to mention here for people to look into?
Okay, I got one.
All right.
So a couple of years ago, you know, all the business I've always been doing has been like kind of national, international. So like, you know, we ship stuff out to dealers, but we never really had anything locally that we get to go see. So we started, this is a little out there. We started brewing beer at Leon about 5 years ago. We built a commercial brew rig right in our file room. Because when I was traveling, you know, that was like the lens I would start to look through. Like you find local culture, you know, where at dive bars, clubs, restaurants, and breweries, right? So that's how I like would experience the world. And so eventually I'm like, damn, I gotta figure this out. But what's been cool is like applying Leonism to beer was insane. So like, you know, highest quality of possible materials, local farming, you know, best artisans, collaboration, all these things like played really well into beer. And because I don't have a band right now, it became like a really dope part about what we're living like now. So we launched the commercial brand called Mothfire Brewing Company. May of 2020, we bought a commercial rig of like a brewery that had gone defunct and completely rebuilt it. It was like almost like a garage startup band. It was insane. Like, so I was going from here, you know, speaker boy all night and then beer person all night. All, you know, I was speakers by day, beer by night. And that became kind of like the new band. But now we are like a band of sisters and brothers over there. And that brand caught fire, you know, like it's called Mothfire, and the vision for Mothfire is about building a cultural bonfire, around art and music. And I realized like beer is a good little key to that puzzle. So yeah, we've launched and designed over 25 beers so far this year. Like the last beer we just like last week officially sold out of every single beer we made. We are out of damn beer. So I had to bring in more 10-barrel tanks, double down on my systems. We got the dopest brewer. Her name's Alexis Jorgensen. She was from Stone Brewery out in California. And so this is like, I feel like I'm back in a band. So yeah, if you guys want to check that out, check out mothfirebrewing.com. And if anybody needs beer, I'm not allowed to ship it, but you might get a package with a gift at some point. Just if you need. I love just designing the beers, designing the labels. My brothers are involved. My bro is killing it with the brand design, Dan Kaplan. So what a completely different trip, but at least, you know, when you apply all that, I can now share some with people for a few dollars instead of like Leon, you know, you buy a Leon for life, a beer you just buy for every night. So.
Yeah. I'm looking at the website right now and you have some IPAs, sour ale.
Yeah, we got
the labels are fire, man.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I'm like moderately obsessed with this. It's like a great distraction because like I don't know why I'm finding more freedom in diversifying what I'm working on. You know, like the more I work on that, I'm like, oh wait, why don't we just add color to this? Or, you know, hey, why don't we just change the recipe a little bit over there or reconfigure it this way a little bit or change the way we sell it? So it's a pretty cool mashup to get into a totally new industry, but I could tell you like, I love big equipment and factories and this beer factory, like it's almost doubling down every 6 months now. Like we've had, like it went it'll be five times the size by the end of the year that it was at the beginning of last year. And so it's like, it's really fun. And so, yeah, if anybody, you know, cause like 25 years of speakers, there's still so much more to do, but I want to be drinking while I'm doing it. Similar to music, you know, I want to bring in new elements to keep it floating high above that cloud.
I just see the full spectrum with the design, the production, the creativity. Then you've got the soundtrack to everything. Now you've got the drinks to accompany it. I'm thinking now there's going to be a restaurant,
we have all those things are in the works. All those things, like, yeah, we want to build a culture around the arts. That is the vibe. That is the vision forever. My personal vision, I think at this age, is now definitely coming into play in the foreground every day about how I'm thinking, you know. So like my personal vision is to build a creative community, you know, that's sustainable. And I think that there's no better, you know, thing than being able to provide a place where people can just hang out, feel, you know, included, and really to push culture forward. So like make venues, you know, so yeah, we're definitely building bars, we have restaurant interests, we're like refurbishing a little city block locally. Like we're really trying to push that local vibe now, because again, where are you going to play? Leon's like, I think the retail of the future is not going to be in stores.
Yeah.
Right. So I want to make sure that we're building like, hey, here's a prototype of what I think it's going to look like. Like, it's like the food hall vision of food is like the food hall vision also that I have for selling retail products or exposing people to new experiences. Like, where are you going to go see the next thing? You know, the next furniture, the new lighting thing, the new tech thing, the new audio thing, the new car, like where are you going to even go? So I think we have to like rethink all that as well. But yeah, I could say it's staying home is pretty elevating and lit. And also, you know, also want to say reverence to all the people who have lost people and who have suffered through this time. Like, you know, it's a hard thing to balance those two thoughts. Right. So I don't want to get carried away during this time, but I do want to make sure that we come out of this thing changed, you know, yeah, for the right. better, mentally, culturally, spiritually.
Right. Absolutely. Noah Kaplan, you know, before we sign off here, we ask all of our guests, you know, is there one home tech device at your house outside of, you know, the products that you create that you can't live without?
Oh, like that's a great, great question. I'm going to have to go to coffee tech.
Yeah. Okay.
I love coffee machine technology. Oh my God. Like, I don't think I could do without my Mocha Master number one, like, you know, waking up with coffee in the day. And then I will also say like this, the smart fridge, like the beer fridge.
Yeah.
Custom critical. All right. So yeah, I'm pretty basic. I have a very basic home life. My life is like more like a firefly. So, but yeah, I love coffee tech. Like if you show me one of those weird, like handmade pour over machine, I'm getting it. You know, if there's some way they could get the temperature of coffee to exactly 220 degrees and make it perfect every time, I'm buying it. So yeah, there's all kind of weird contraptions and siphons and things. And that's like my home toys. So, if you're into coffee, I highly recommend investing in all those bizarre things.
You're not one of those people that weighs their espresso grind. 18 grams is the perfect.
No, I'm a maximalist. I'm like, I'm trying to smash as much. I'm like, I want like a nice, you know, I need to get all the way up in the morning. So, but I will say there's some insane new technologies coming down the pipeline that I'm excited about. And I know you guys have heard the word before, but what I'm really looking at now is ways to, like, you know, you guys know about NFTs and non-fungible mm-hmm. tokens, like ways to experience that, ways to collect it. I'm working with a lot of my art friends on ways to, like, what is that going to look like? Mm-hmm. How are we going to bridge the digital world with the actual world? Mm-hmm. And shit's about to get weird.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you, it's going to get real weird. So
you know, there's an NFT, just to jump in there, JJ, that it's been all the way through this episode, it's been in my mind, right? NFT, yeah. It's bizarre that you even mentioned it, because there's an NFT I'd love to create. It's the early days of Digital Ramble. It features Leon speakers. It's JJ dancing in front of an NJ sound sculpture with his check shirt. And it was the breakthrough for the Digital Ramble, where people realized, these guys know their stuff and they're entertaining. So
I love it. Maybe we will tokenize JJ. We'll just put you guys right on the blockchain. We'll say one of one for both of you guys. But yeah, no, it's mental. It's like the literal Wild West right now. So a lot of my days I'm thinking about like, what are we going to do? And I'm engaged with a bunch of companies working on exactly those things. So that's a nice open corridor for the future. But I also want to throw a little shout out to you guys for doing what you do. I know, I've seen you guys do, I feel like way over 100 of these shows. I want to thank you guys for doing what you do, for getting out in front, you know, giving people a voice, and also, you know, really digging in deep and getting getting our industry up in the foreground again and like making stuff decipherable and understandable.
Right.
Thank you.
Appreciate and relatable. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And you get it. You get it. You're making content, product rather, and content through your artwork, you know, for people to understand and to appreciate. And ones and zeros is sometimes way over people's heads. And, you know, that's what we wanted the Digital Ramble to be.
Yeah.
Is tech talk for the common person to enjoy.
Smart.
So we appreciate
that's the only way to do it. Like, you know, you don't want to lose people in the words, you know, you want to just, and that's what I love about design, because in design, you know, people could all speak that language. People understand that language because it's simple. Do I like it or do I not? It's kind of binary. Right. And I think those binary thoughts lead to clarity for an industry. So it's like, you know, the more we talk about this, and it's not that we don't want to learn more, or get deeper, but that's kind of like something we kind of need extra permission for, you know, if people want to dig in. But I think it's really important for us all together to redefine the language that we speak. Mm-hmm. You know, if something sounds good, if it looks good, it makes you happy, it's probably a good thing for you. That's as deep as we have to go, or we can get as technical as possible. But I think all the magic behind that on switch, just like your car, most people just want to put that key in the car and turn it on. And so, you know, let's focus on that and focus on the future, because it is going to be an insane decade for sure.
No doubt. Roaring 20s. Here we come.
Let's get it.
Strap in. All right, Digital Ramblers, thank you again for joining us for an epic episode with Noah Kaplan, master of all human senses, sight, sound, smell, taste, and touch. He tackles them. He tackles them all. And again, run over to your computer, start clicking away, check out leonspeakers.com, and also his new brewing company that, you know, he's out of beer right now, but get in line for some Mothfire Brewing over at Mothfire Brewing Company. Noah Kaplan, thank you for joining us here on the Digital Ramble.
Word up, ramble on, y'all. Make it happen.
All right. Cannot wait to see you. You take care.